The following is an edition of Tim Rocky Sports recorded on Tuesday, April 11th. We apologize for the quality of the recording due to some technical difficulties. We were unable to provide the usual good sound, but I think there's enough good stuff here that it is worth listening to as Tim and Taylor talk baseball. Enjoy.
Taylor has a wealth of baseball knowledge, and I want to talk to him about some baseball, some brawl, some parkour, and also what he's been up to lately with travels outside the country. So, Taylor, tell me what your favorite position is to play on baseball.
You know, I'd have to go with catcher because it's one of those positions where you're in it on every play. You know, you're always very active in everything that's going on, especially calling pitches. You got to really pay attention to everything going on around you. You got to pay attention to your hitters. It's really one of the positions where you're most involved in the game. But I like playing all of them. But catcher's definitely where I feel most at home. You could say. Did you get that? Because I'd be behind home plate.
It's a pun.
Yeah, it was a pun.
It was great. So, describe yourself as a hitter on the baseball field. Are you, doubles to the gap kind of guy? Do you hit moonshots? How many home runs did you hit in your career?
Okay, I see what you're doing there. He knows exactly how many home runs I've hit in my career. That's why he's asking me that question. And the answer is zero outside the park home runs, two inside the park in Little League. I'll have you know that. My speed. And my hitting strategy is basically as follows. I am looking for a pitch to hit over the second baseman's head to land softly in the outfield for a safe single.
Taylor played for Colony High School, as you can tell with the hitting strategy. All right, enough of the competitive banter. Let me...
Hello there. We've got some audio difficulties, but now I've got them figured out. So I hope you heard the questions that I was asking Taylor. You got a little solo there with Taylor at that moment. Taylor, talk to me about the state of Major League Baseball at this point. The USA just won the World Baseball Classic. The Cubs just won the World Series. We've got a crazy amount of change, turnover in the game. Who do you see as the best young player? We've got guys like Manny Machado manning the hot corner, even though he's more of a shortstop type of build. Bryce Harper playing outfield, even though he grew up as a catcher. Chris Bryant, who is kind of a jack of all trades, can play just about anywhere, but makes his home at third base. And then Mike Trout, who is just a freak athlete playing in center field. Who do you think is the best young player in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, there's a lot of really exciting young guys coming up, and the game itself is in a really good spot right now, I think. Like you said, the U.S. winning the World Baseball Classic and the Cubs winning the World Series has really revitalized, I think, the MLB and baseball as a sport. So unfortunately, it has, like, that stigma of being, like a boring game to some people, but right now I don't think that's how people are seeing it. And, yeah, I'm really liking all the young Cubs. Bryant is just outstanding. You can't really throw the ball to him anywhere and not have him hit it really hard somewhere. And Bryce Harper is just like the definition of a 5-tool player. Who I really like coming up right now is Francisco Lindor. He is the shortstop for the Indians, and he's one of these guys that he looks kind of like a contact slap hitter type guy, but then he hits the ball like 430 feet, and he's also an excellent defensive player. So I really like him coming up. I'm really excited to see where his career goes.
You weren't one to step on the mound all that often. Not velocity was not one of the areas that you excelled. But, I'm not saying you don't have a great arm, because obviously you do.
That's what he's saying. He's really good at these backhand compliments. You see, he's really, and since he has this radio show, this big radio show now, he thinks he can just lead me into these questions where he can make fun of me. But
so who's your favorite pitcher in Major League Baseball, Taylor?
My favorite pitcher?
Who do you think's just got it going on right now?
I mean, as Tim knows, I'm a Yankees fan, and so my biased opinion, my biased choice is going to be Dellin Betances, because he has got just the nastiest stuff. I really don't understand how anyone can put a barrel to the ball against him when he's on the mound.
So, to add some context, what Taylor says when he means stuff, if you're not spending your summers on baseball fields like we are. When a pitcher throws a fastball, it goes straight, right? But when a pitcher throws a breaking ball, the space that it takes to move from one spot to the other, the rotations that it goes through, the harder you rotate the ball, the more rotations it goes through, the quicker it will actually make that movement. So somebody with, as they say, I'm doing air quotes right now, electric stuff is someone whose breaking ball breaks very abruptly and with a lot of movement, as opposed to some of the older Jamie Moyer types who will just kind of lob the ball in there and it will move, but gravity is doing most of the work at that point. Taylor, who do you think has a shot at winning the World Series this year? The Cubs and Indians both look great after what they did in last year's Fall Classic. The Boston Red Sox restocked, but they do kind of the opposite of what their football counterparts in New England do, the Patriots, where the Patriots will let go of players before they've ended their prime, and the Red Sox have kind of taken to picking up players at the end of their prime and paying them too much money just because they know there's good baseball to be had, to be played by them. Who do you see as the team to watch this year going into the Fall Classic?
Yeah, I think obviously the two front runners are still going to be the Cubs and the Indians. They're just, both those lineups are just so well put together. They have so much talent. It's going to be really hard to compete with them. The Red Sox are also up there. I would probably put them in a safe number three. It's like you said, they do have that strategy, and they, as a demonstration of that, they picked up Chris Sale, who is incredible, but like you said, he's kind of nearing the end of his prime a little bit, but he's still got a lot left in the tank. My sleeper pick, however, who I've been really excited about, is the Minnesota Twins.
That is the sleeper of all sleepers.
It is the sleeper of all sleepers, but I've watched a few of their games over the last week, and I've been really impressed with their plate, with their strategy going into at-bats. They're very patient. They really wait for that pitch to hit. They're not like a slugging team, but they really focus on just getting on base, and then they've got a couple sluggers in their lineup like Sano, who really like drive it in, like Sano and Dozier. So I'm really excited to see where the season takes them.
The Twins are kind of the Cardinals of the American League, where they have great farm system every year. They've got young guys who overproduce, and they've got old guys who just have resurgences in their career whenever they step foot in that stadium. It used to be the Ron Gardenhire way of you've got Torii Hunter and a bunch of no-names who go out there and win the division every year. But I kind of have to echo Taylor's sentiment on the Twins, that they are getting back to that kind of Minnesota way of playing ball, where it's not small ball, but it's kind of surprise ball is what I would call
it. Where that's a good way of putting it.
You never expect them to be one of the better teams in the league, but I think they could give the Tigers and the Indians a run for their money. In the Royals, running the money in the Central. I want to talk about one area that is not often done by baseball players, that is hitting pitchers. So Madison Bumgarner led Major League Baseball in home runs for one day, but the man swings a good bat. Kohei Ohtani of Japan is one of the best hitters in the league and one of the best pitchers in the league. It is something that happens infrequently where Major League Baseball players will both pitch and hit, but do you think that's something that could be kind of a two-way street for professional players coming into the game in the future, where they are not only pitchers, but they are also professional hitters?
Yeah, I think Bumgarner is kind of setting a precedent, especially for the National League, because, you know, that's such a thing for them, is that they have to work almost their entire game strategy off of, you know, how they're dealing with these pitchers in the lineup when you're getting to these key at-bats, like, late in the game. And it just, you only have so deep of a bench, but when you have a guy like Bumgarner in there, you can leave him in to pitch another inning if you're confident with his bat. And I think that's just another way that these guys are going to be able to stay in the games longer and really get these jobs. Yeah, I think he's just been incredible. And I think he is really just setting this precedent for pitchers to make sure they can hit a little bit, at least have an idea of what they're doing up at the plate.
Should the designated hitter be abolished?
Ah, man, I don't think so. I actually really like, I really like how they have things right now, how the AL has the DH and the NL doesn't. I think that gives you a little bit of old school baseball in one side of the league and a little bit of kind of this newer school baseball on the other side of the league. I think there's pros and cons both ways. Obviously, it's a little more exciting watching a DH hit than a pitcher in its own ways. You know, sometimes it's funny to watch a pitcher just have no clue what's going on and just take three strikes, lay down a really, really bad, poorly fundamental bunt. But I do really like the DH. I think it just adds a little more tension to the situation because you don't have that almost automatic out that is the pitcher most of the time in the NL.
So I am the head coach of the Palmer Pioneers at this moment, and you have already said that you will not help me coach, which, you know, saddens me in a deep, deep way.
Yes.
But you had spent some time coaching for Post 35, the A team, and then when they combined to be Post 35/15, the AA team. Talk to me about your experience with baseball in the Valley on the other side of our playing days. And, you know, what do you see as the changes, maybe the faults or the strengths? What's the pulse of baseball in the Valley? I know you've been out of the country for, quite some time, but what do you think what's the situation with baseball in the Valley and how can it get better?
Yeah, the tough thing about baseball in the Valley is that the seasons are always just so short. There's only so much you can do in the, like, you really only have 2 good months of baseball to play. So most of the time you're having to practice in a gym before the season starts, which really makes it hard on a lot of these players. They just don't have the time to really get in that rhythm to get their skills developed before the end of the season. By the time they're really getting into a groove, I mean, the season's over. So that's always a really big problem, and that was only more apparent when I was a coach, because you really see how short the season is. Like, when you're playing, you're just so wrapped up in improving every day and really, like, getting your timing down that you don't think about that as much, but it's something that, as a coach, like, it was just very apparent how short the seasons are and how much that really affects the mentality of a lot of the players.
So what's the difference between, and this will be our last, you know, hardball, softball question before we shift gears a little bit. What's the difference between hitting a baseball and then hitting a softball? When I drafted you and your mother, who is an excellent hitter, as well as team mom, Debbie.
Debra was a formidable player for the Workaholics.
Shout out to Debbie. She actually out-hit you for a number of games.
But over the course of the season, yeah, I think
your batting average ended up higher.
Yeah.
But
law of averages, that's what
we've got to give props
to Debbie.
Folks
at home listening.
And she also, you know, put it out there. Debbie was a hustler. She was getting dirty. Anyway. So,
a hustler as in she played hard, not as my mom is a hustler.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. She hit, I think, a double and a triple at one point that required sliding. And, you know, Debbie is an athlete. Let's not negate that. But going out there and sliding is not something I expected her to do when she joined the team. All right, enough about your mother. She's a wonderful lady. So what's the difference between striking a baseball, you know, you try to take a round bat and hit a round ball square. What's the difference between hitting a baseball and a softball? And how do former baseball players change their swings to be successful softball players?
Yeah, the timing of both is essentially different sports, because you just hitting a baseball is so much more about reaction than really than thinking. You have to go in, you have to think before you're a bat, and then while you're batting, you basically have to stop thinking and trust your hands and your body and your muscle memory to do what you need to do. But softball, it's very different because you have all the time in the world to stand there and watch the ball just fall down at you. And the mechanics of the swing is different too, just because of the trajectory of the ball. And it really messes with your head a little bit. But once you get the timing down, it's not too hard as long as you don't try and do too much with every pitch and try and hit them all out.
Are you trying to talk some trash to me right there, Taylor?
That was my Tim version of a backhanded comment.
Nice work. So, you know, and that's one of my struggles with trying to coach kids is they think about where they want to hit the ball, they think about what's coming next, and they think about who is delivering the ball. And it's tough. All right, so love talking about baseball, Taylor. I could do it for hours and hours on end. But we'll save that for the drinking establishment later. So I want to talk to you about something that you are much better than I am at. Baseball, you know, we're kind of even. Wow. But Frolf.
On the agenda for argument.
Yeah, okay. You are way better than me at Frolf.
Yes.
I think I first went, and the name of disc golf as Frolf is up for debate, but we'll get to that later.
Yes.
How did you get your beginnings in Frolf, and how did you get so darn good?
Well, you know, great segue, because baseball was actually a huge part of why I enjoy disc golf, Frolf, so much, because it... I played a lot of middle infield in baseball, and I developed a disc golf throw that's very close to that infield throw. But yeah, so I basically one day just went out. A couple of us guys just heard that disc golf existed and wanted to try it, and we went out and we all got pretty hooked. We just played the short hole, the 9-hole Alcantara field, which is now a luscious 18 to 20 hole course, depending on how you play it. But we all really enjoyed it. It's really nice to be outside. If you're like me and Tim and enjoy throwing things and being outside, it's really one of the best ways to spend your time. And yeah, it just grew from there. Me and this core group of guys, we just started playing all the courses around Anchorage and in Peters Creek. And then when I went to Missoula, Montana for school, there's a couple of really nice courses there. And that hobby really just took off for me. And it hasn't stopped.
So talk to me about the evolution of the course in Wasilla. You've been at the Alcantara course at Larson Elementary for years and years and years. You've seen it go through renovations, adding holes, and then just what's the community like out there, and how has it changed over the course of time that you've been there?
Yeah, so when we first started playing there, the course was not in the best shape. Unfortunately, it had a lot of issues with vandalism and people just doing illicit activities in the area. But luckily, that's changed a lot as disc golf has become a little more known, a little more of a renowned activity. People are taking it a little bit more seriously. Not that you should take it super seriously, but they're taking it serious enough to take care of the courses and really make sure that people that actually want to go out there and play have a place to play a legitimate round. I think a few months ago they just added on that extra nine holes in the back half of the course. And I just played it the other day, and it was still pretty wet and frozen and cold, but it was. I was impressed. It looks like they have a pretty good foundation for what is going to be a very legitimate course out there now.
What's your favorite course to play in the state?
Ooh, in the state. Blue Ribbon Pines in Minnesota was probably the best course I've ever played.
In the state of Alaska.
I think you said the states.
Whatever.
Tim, you're on the radio. You got to enunciate, okay? In the state, it would probably be Peters Creek. I think Kincaid Park is probably a more well-managed course. It's more of a professional course. But Peters Creek is just out in the woods, really raw, a lot of obstacles, a lot of really big throws. You got to do around, like, trees. And I just really like that environment, so I'd have to say Peters Creek.
So it'd be safe to say your favorite course in the world is in Minnesota?
In the world, yes. That would probably be my favorite. At first I thought it was an actual golf course because it was just so well maintained, and there was a clubhouse and there's people driving around on carts, and then
what?
You realize it's a disc golf course. And it was amazing. There's like a bar on hole nine, and it was incredible. But there's some really great courses all throughout the Northwest and Midwest.
Sounds like I need to take a road trip. All right, so with the last remaining bits of our show, shout out to Mike Molesky, by the way, coming in, fixing the technical difficulties that I have. Talk to me about what you've been up to lately, what you've been working on as far as film projects, and just, how's life for Taylor Palmer going?
Life is good right now. I'm back in Alaska for a little while after I was traveling in South America for about 6.5 months. We started in Panama. Me and a crew of six of us, we were filming a documentary in Casco Viejo, Panama City, about the MMA/jiu-jitsu scene there, which was a really insightful experience to be able to follow the lives of some of those MMA fighters down there. And then I traveled through Colombia and Ecuador and Peru and got to see some of the other parts of the world.
Are there any frog courses in South America?
Unfortunately, not yet. I'm planning a trip back down there to begin that whole,
start construction.
The emergence of that sport in South America. Because I think it really could do well down there. It's a sport that's very cheap to play.
Yes,
and
true.
You really just need open area and some baskets. And there's a lot of open area down there. So
it has,
could take off.
It has its positives. What is the Over 9000 Parkour crew?
Oh, man. Okay, so Over 9000 Parkour is the pinnacle of parkour performance in the entire world. This was a crew put together by me and three of my high school friends.
Three of my high school friends and I.
Yes. I mean, that is grammatically correct, Tim. Thank you. Anyways, I'm not much of a speaker. I'm more of a parkour performer. But yes, and we put together a pretty sweet 8-minute demo tape titled Over 9000 Parkour, because if you ever watch Dragon Ball Z, you know that over 9000 is impossible. So we really took that sport to the max, and I'm sure that video's on the recesses of the internet somewhere. I'll have to give Tim the link to that so we can really get that going. It's been like 6 years now, and we really haven't gotten as much acclaim as we should at this point. Honestly,
yeah. I figured you guys would win like an Emmy by now.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Taylor, for coming in. We'll have to do this again many more times. It's a wonderful day. If you haven't been outside, get outside. If you're not one of the people who work outside like I am, you probably want to get outside. Go ahead and do it. Taylor, thanks for coming in, offering all of your knowledge. We'll make sure to do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.